Mifflin Snifflehort Books presents What It's Like to Be a Video Game Reviewer, read and narrated by Carrick from ACG. Additional sounds provided by Random Orifices, copyright 2019. What It's Like to Be a Video Game Reviewer, Part 1. Oh shit. Chapter 1. He worked his way down the smooth path towards the parking lot across from the heavily lit building behind him. The world was shadows, a gray day, the kind that seeps into your bones and makes movement just a little bit more difficult. Today, that difficulty was layered beneath another topping of what the fuck, because he just got laid off. Are you kidding me? I'm not going to actually read this shit to you. What this is going to be is various stories about what it's like to be a video game reviewer, starting with Chapter 1, which is one of the first games, me getting laid off, and what it's like to start out at zero. And let's begin. So I want to do these videos and or Anchor podcasts, iTunes podcasts to describe to people what it's like to start out as a YouTube reviewer and just the different steps that I had. This is something that's come up, something I want to talk about. These will be in audio form for sure on the different podcast sites and probably in a video form of some kind on YouTube. And hey, who knows, maybe I'll do some side ones on Twitter. What I'm going to do is describe to you the ins and the outs, just the various ways in which I got started and the odd stories that can come up when you are reviewing video games, which frankly, as I say many times in the real world, matters about, well, nada. So let's begin. I think the first time, especially when I was walking out of the building, I had been laid off. I'd worked at this place for 8+ years, worked really hard. I was definitely a diligent employee, somebody who was always there to try to really help that company end up doing its best. And when you get laid off, that's one of the problems, is a lot of times people who get laid off, there isn't really a recourse. There's really nothing you can do. Luckily, prior to getting laid off, I had started reviewing on the side some smaller titles, titles that I wanted to review. And this had all come about from the way in which I talked about games with my friends. This is something I've talked to you guys about. I didn't use a 1 to 10 scale. I did use a go out and get it now, maybe wait for a little while, maybe wait for a long while, or don't ever touch this kind of game rating system with all of the friends around me. And a lot of my friends were video gamers, but I was certainly the one that I would say led the charge when it came to the amount of time, when it comes to how long I played the game, but also the technical elements. I was a tech freak. I was a tech freak from a little child. I've always been the mad scientist. I was the one who got the Atari 2600, played games on it, then figured out how to hack it, took it apart, and then couldn't put the goddamn thing back together again. This is the same things that I had always done when I was a child. I was one of the first people to have Pong in my neighborhood. Pong was a system that you plugged it into your TV and it had a couple games on it, and it had a light gun attachment if you wanted it. One of the crazy things is they forgot to turn the light gun attachment off when people were playing other games. So cut to my brother and my mother playing tennis on Pong and me shooting the ball and making it disappear in the middle of their games from the back couch. And let me tell you, that was probably the first time I ended up getting in a fist fight because my brother and I did not get along. So I've always been a big tech head. I've always been somebody who followed everything. I was the person who wanted to know what Mode 7 was on the SNES. I wanted to know how the Sega Saturn worked with its multiple RISC processors, why they chose to do what they did. I wanted to know everything about the Dreamcast, even when it came to the rampant piracy that later came out. I wanted to know everything all the way back. I had a TurboGrafx-16, which is a portable version of the TurboGrafx-16 system. It was actually called the TurboGrafx-16 Express or something like that. I had that as well. I've always been somebody into that, but I've also been somebody who understands that tech doesn't always equal a game. Been interested in games for years. I've always liked doing them. I've always written little games. One of the first games I ever wrote was a text choose your own adventure on the TRS-80. Or Trash 80, as we called it, which was prior to pretty much any of the big PC companies releasing anything. The Apple II, I taught myself BASIC and had a great teacher, Mr. Ford, he sadly passed away, who taught me a lot about what it's like to try to create something, but create something new and just for you. I still remember one of the classes I got in middle school was to write a game, and he didn't really care how the game worked. And so what I did was I went and looked, I wrote a game, but I also took some stuff from other games I had learned, and he was able to immediately identify what games I had taken these different elements from and really chided me for that. He was like, you know, you're somebody who's really dynamic in your ability to describe things, ability to do things. You should take nothing from someone else. And that really stuck with me for a long time. He was one of those guys that when you got praise from, it hit hard because you knew that it was from a place of absolute care for helping kids grow and learn. One of the best computer teachers I ever had. So for years I had been doing this. For years I had been gaming. I had had all the systems, or almost all the systems. I was a person who had all the third-party controllers. I had everything you could think of. I was the person who got a rickety-ass Sega Saturn steering wheel, which, by the way, wasn't really any kind of force feedback steering wheel. It was the one with the bungee cords that pulled it back to center, and center was never the same because two bungee cords that are stretched and unstretched and stretched and unstretched a thousand times are never actually going to end up being the same length anymore. And I put it on a damn cardboard box to play Sega Rally. That's how insane I was when it came to games. I absolutely loved games. Didn't make my rent a couple times because of games, which is something I can honestly say I do not suggest. So I worked for many years, worked for 18 years at another company, worked for another 8+ at this company, and I was laid off. It was a very typical money-saving kind of situation. And as I was leaving, I decided, you know what? I'm going to go for it. I pretty much knew right away that day that that's what I wanted to do. I had seen a little bit of success on YouTube, and I knew that at minimum it would be something fun to do as I went and looked at other things. I've been a life coach, I've taught martial arts. There's various other things I knew I could probably end up doing. And my particular job and what I did, I had been around the world, or at least worked around the world with others on doing what I did. And so I knew I could always sort of step back into that role if I wanted. But I wanted to give YouTube a shot. So I came home, discussed it with family members, and decided, you know what? We're going to give this 2 to 3 years, and we're going to see what we can do. I had a pretty good retirement set up that I could take from if I wanted, minus the penalties, as we all know. And I did. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to make a go of this. This was prior to really anybody creating personas online. There were a couple angries, with Angry Video Game Nerd, Angry Joe, and the like, but really wasn't a number of personas, the WWE-style personas that we see so fluent now when it comes to YouTube and Twitch and other areas. I didn't really know what to call myself. However, the name, originally when it started, Angry Centaur Gaming, was created by my roommate Claudio. He was a great guy, a person that I lived with for quite a long time, and he was messy. The honest truth is he was so messy that I pretty much figured if I fell down in his room, number one, I'd be lost forever, most likely starving. Number two, I'd get tetanus at the very least from scratching myself on a pair of jeans that hadn't been washed in enough months that it looked like a fucking boulder in his corner. So I went in there one day and I was joking around. And I was kicking his clothes around and I was like, you need to clean this place. And he didn't know English very well. And he said, you're like an angry horseman, those horsemen that we play in D&D or that we fight in D&D. And I'm like, a centaur? And he said, yeah. And I said, oh, like an angry centaur roommate. Well, that became the name of a rock band in the video game rock band. It became a name in just various things. It sounded so random. That's how the name got chosen originally when I started. But to go back to this, I was laid off. I went home. I did a video saying, you know what? I'm going to make a go of this. And I really sat down and decided what I needed to do. Now, the reason why I brought up the fact that there was no real rock stars or WWE-style stars in YouTube at this time is because I feel that I got lucky when I started because there weren't. Because what really worked for me was just being me. It was being exactly the way I am. I do talk fast. I do drop jokes 24 hours a day to possibly the annoyance of everybody around me. But I really am onomatopoeia when it comes to a game reviewer. I am what I sound like. I am this person. And so I didn't really need any kind of caricature. I didn't need to do anything extra. What I decided to do was identify the different elements in which I had begun. Now, a lot of people have always asked me, why do you go with categories? Categories are the old way of doing it. First of all, categories are only the old way for the people who want a new way. There, a lot of people don't realize that there's a great group of people out there that still want the old way, de facto old way of delivering reviews. But additionally, I find that most podcast reviews, most free thinking reviews, if they pretend they're not covering these categories, are just absolutely full of shit. They're covering the same categories. What they're not doing is saying the word graphics. What I found, especially when I was talking about games, is that a lot of times graphics feed into gameplay, gameplay feeds into graphics, sound feeds into music, music feeds into sound, and they all feed back into gameplay, and then of course they all create fun factor. So for me, what I found was creating categories worked incredibly well for me because I was able to hit a category and explain different elements in which the graphics do impact the gameplay. It's one of the reasons why if you listen quite closely to me talking about graphics or sound or music, I'll talk about, for example, sound informing the gamer and things like that. I'm not just talking about if they're good sound samples. And you don't hear that a lot of times because I think when it's the more open format, a lot of stuff actually gets lost because it's easier to sort of get off track. So it's something that I knew right away I wanted to do. I wanted to do categories. I felt that the categories really worked well for me. However, I didn't really know how to start this thing. I didn't know how to jumpstart it. So what I did is I initiated friend plan number one. And I'm telling all you guys, if you start out, you need to do this. I got a hold of all my friends. And I said, if you have a Facebook, if you have a Twitter account, at that time, Twitch was nowhere near what it is now. I was like, make sure to tell people that I'm doing this. This is the stuff I'm doing. And then I jumped into what is considered the black hole of pretty much starting any channel, and that's the tech and the art. The art, as you guys know, has never been the same for the channel. It's changed multiple times, and I've decided as I've continued on that, in fact, it works better for me to not stick with one art. The overall thumbnail is the same now once I figured out what I wanted to do with the thumbnail, but the art for the channel has changed multiple times and probably will continue to change. I also love different art styles. Different art styles attract me at different times. If you go to the Twitch channel, we're sort of neon right now. You know why? Because I fucking like neon right now. And I've decided that that's really what works for me, is to not solidify into one particular thing. So I jumped in here and I started doing a lot of this stuff myself. And it was really a year to 2 years of consistent teaching, of learning what the difference between a normal bitmap kind of picture is and what a vector map picture is, and you know, or a raster, I'm sorry, and doing all these different things and understanding that you can make one type of picture at a certain resolution, and if you blow it up, it looks like shit. But if you make it in a certain type, then you can blow it up and you don't lose detail. All of these things that you don't really understand or pick up on. And so I went with Angry Centaur Gaming, and that leads me to the beginnings of the videos. At first, I didn't have a music track, and then I was like, you know, I really like a music track. So I went online, I found a pretty cool editor, used Adobe After Effects, I made the Angry Centaur Games logo twist around and all of this crazy stuff, and threw some royalty-free hard rock music in there, and I was like, go for it. This sort of fits me at the moment. Absolutely dig it. And I put that in there. And I decided when I have a starting, I'm going to sort of do it one way. And when I have an ending, I'm going to sort of end a particular way. And I just started doing peace out, bitches. What was funny to me when I ended reviews, especially at the starting, is how it was an atrocity to some people. It was a friggin' war crime. It was crazy how many people got mad when I said peace out, bitches. How many people would be like, don't call me your bitch. And I'd just be like, man, you got it. That was really my first, I think, idea of what it was like in the world and how just how everybody had such a thin skin compared to me. And I don't really know why I have a thick skin. I think when it comes down to it, it's multiple difficulties I had when I was sick, when I was younger. I've had cancer. I've had a couple things go wrong. And I think over time, that certainly had my fair share of unbelievable trouble that is just crazy. And I think over time I realized, you know, what really matters is the information I'm giving out. It doesn't really matter if somebody's mad because of a certain word. And this is something I've taken since day one. And I'll also share with you guys a story of being attacked on one of my reviews. Not attacked, but I would say rightfully criticized on one of my reviews, and how that really helped me. Because it was a bigger YouTuber and they went after me, and it really helped me at the time sort of realize what matters, what doesn't matter, and what even hits my radar now. So I get all this set up, start doing my art. Cadiz, who's one of my friends, he's in our Patreon Discord. If you get a chance, I'd love for you to join Patreon, but if you get into the Patreon Discord, you'll see him there. He's been a friend of mine since I was, I don't know, probably I'm a couple years older than him, maybe 19 or 20. We met actually at the prior job, and I ended up getting the job that I was laid off from and actually hiring him onto that job because I liked it so much. And we met talking randomly about Darksiders, I believe, on the Sega Saturn. We ended up talking in this little cubicle area, and I was like, yeah, I'm playing games. And he's like, oh, what games do you like? And we suddenly realized, holy shit, we like games. We've been fast friends ever since. One of the greatest guys I've ever known. So I figured, you know what? Let's jump him in here. I didn't know the difficulties of YouTube at the time and the difficulties of what YouTube was going through, the switches from Let's Plays to something else, the switches that we would see with Twitch years later, which I'll describe in another video. But I looked at all this and I was like, what do I want to do? And I did the typical Carrick thing. This is something I've been known for since day one, and that's jumping head fucking first into a pool that is only 6 inches deep. This is always what I do. And then getting back up and just trying to make that hole that I made with my head even bigger. So what I did was I tried to do everything. I had reviews and podcasts and Let's Plays, and Cadiz was very helpful. He did Let's Plays, even though it was funny because he'd do a Let's Play and people get mad that it wasn't me on the Let's Play, even though we'd be like presented by Cadiz and he was in all the podcasts. But even then, I think right when I was starting, I started to notice something that, and this is good advice for anybody starting, is that you'll start to realize that there's these different audiences and they don't watch the other stuff. I've had people who have never seen a podcast that I've done, and I've had people who've never seen a review. They just watch the Walking the Walks or previews or impressions or just the podcasts. And this is something that luckily enough, we started to see right from the start. But I decided to jump in and look at these games and start doing these reviews and start doing them in a way that was organic to me, which meant there wasn't going to be any difference between the way I joke and talk and the way I delivered the reviews. And I felt that that was easiest because it would require the least amount of, I would say, prep, and was more of a raw version of me and more exactly the way I talked. And I felt I've never been a big fan or a big proponent of personas. I think they work for some people. Dr. Disrespect is absolutely hammered at home with personas. Some others do well with personas, but I find that personas change with the person and therefore can a lot of times end up causing you an issue years down the road. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to be me. My username for years, a D&D character we created was called Carrick. I chose that because it means certain things in the Warhammer universe as well as in the universe we played in. I like the name, so that's what I stuck with, and it's been a username that I used. So I had all these things, and I tried to figure out where exactly do I start? What do I do? What's the thing that I need to actually cover for people? What actually makes sense? So what I started doing was I started covering games that I had purchased and doing reviews for them. And there were a good deal of learning experiences, I think, when it comes to how everybody ends up taking those first steps. You can take the wrong first step and everything can be a disaster and you can really set yourself back. I got lucky and I sort of decided that it worked well to do podcasts because I worked well with Cadiz and podcasts on my own and I have no shortage of things to say. But at the same time, I had not only the ability to do that, but the ability to break down games. So I jumped from a couple games. Nothing really hit. It was enjoyable to do. I was figuring out where I was going. And I saw some success early on, even with the smaller games. I certainly saw that success. And I realized, hey, you know what? There's a place for me. And there's a place for people who are themselves. Because again, at this time, there wasn't necessarily a large number of personas, but those personas, I think, really ended up flooding the market, and there really wasn't anybody out there that was offering something that people could identify. We had having magazines on street corners that were doing video game reviews and so forth, and people hadn't made that huge jump to YouTube other than just a couple, and those couple, I think, at least for the sake of argument, a lot of times we're using these personas to sort of push it a little farther than it normally was and become an entertainment venue other than just a review, which I wanted to do a reviews in an entertaining fashion versus just being entertaining and also having a review in there. And I think that that's something that we all need to decide as we move forward, what we're going to do, how we're going to deliver something. When you're starting out your channel, when it comes to how you're going to deliver your content, your art, that kind of thing, I would certainly say, make sure that you have some definitive ideas that you want to stick with. A lot of people sort of throw everything out there. There's a lot of energy wasted on even art. The amount of energy wasted by people on Fiverr not really knowing what they want and just looking and finding what somebody else's looks like and going, oh, I sort of want that, but slightly purple. So they look a little bit different. That's not going to resonate with you. What I would say is sit down and really identify what you want to do moving forward. And it doesn't require a lot of money to get these things set up. It doesn't require a lot of money to identify how you want to deliver your game reviews, your game impressions, your game previews. All that kind of stuff is cerebral, right? It's very cerebral. And it can be nothing more than a jot on a piece of paper of an idea for a design, what you want it to look like, what you want to do.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And by all means, use the people around you. What do they like? What are they seeing? What really interests them? What do they have ideas? Those ideas can really help you and move you forward when it comes to deciding what you want to do. So by this time, I pretty much had some art for Angry Centaur Gaming at the time. It was okay art. It was just some stuff that I cribbed, some stuff that I got from various artists. And I got some ideas about how I wanted to do it. And I was seeing, I would say, somewhat success on some of the reviews, especially because what I felt was it really didn't matter. As long as I showed the game as well as I could, other things couldn't necessarily wait, but they certainly weren't as important. So let me give you an example. As long as you show the game and you give some information, if your mic quality is bad, and some people will live with that, some won't. My mic quality was bad at the time. I live in a house, like I said, with fairly few grounds. Things aren't grounded very well, so there was a lot of ground hum, things like that. You really do have to fight those. But now the technology is so much more forward. People are able to get a USB mic, and as long as their PC isn't connected to the same outlet five other things are, they can usually do a fairly good recording. And there's a lot of good YouTubes out there that you can watch that can help you sort of solidify some of this, understand what audio leveling is. That's a big deal, and I had that issue. I even came from a background in music and such, and it was difficult for me to figure out because depending on where you go and what you're uploading, people required or sort of wanted a certain audio leveling on their YouTube videos. It was a crazy time. But that's the difference between, I think, the cerebral and the technical bits. A lot of that stuff can be learned and can be identified without really costing you money. It'll cost you time to understand what you want your art to look like, to understand what you want your thumbnails to look like. Now, this really, I think, brings up one of the major points when it comes to, especially as I started, is don't copy anybody. I've had people copy my review style, the buy, wait for sale, rent, never touch. And I find it absolutely stunning because it makes no sense to them. When I came up with a buy, wait for sale, rent, that was actually the way I talked to Cadiz, the way I talked to Vanzawal, Guido, all my friends who do their own stuff, their own streams, their own games. That's how I talked to them. And those review categories fit for me perfectly. I could identify very easily what did fit into a buy. If somebody else were to just jump in and say, oh, I'm going to use those as well, they have absolutely none of the ideas on what really moves something up into a buy if, let's say, it has technical issues, but it's very fun. How fun does it need to be? How much enjoyment? I found it really odd that there were so many people who were willing to copy, and that was something that I, at the time, just didn't want to do when it came to how I reviewed games. And that was another cerebral moment. These are moments that you can do on your own and ideas you can have on your own and thought processes you can have where you do not need to copy somebody. You can make up your own kind of review process, and you can cover things in a unique way. This is also when sound, music, and voice came up. I reviewed some games, mixed sound, music, and voice, decided to do them different, adjusted them a couple times, and I really sat with sound, music, and voice for two or three reasons. And let me tell you, this is sort of the way I work. A lot of people were mad that I included music, which to me immediately indicated I for sure want to include music every time, because I knew that people were listening to it, even if they were mad, and they were. But additionally, there were a number of people that were incredibly happy music was finally covered. We live in a world where we buy OSTs all the friggin' time. And just because you're a person who turns down the music to play your own Avenged Sevenfold hard rock covers so you feel cool while you're playing fucking Dragon's Dogma, that's not everybody. And sound was a big deal to me. Sound was something that I'd seen not covered in many games. In fact, most games, in fact, still in reviews, you see many reviews not even cover sound, music, or voice, or they don't know how to cover it, and you see them just blathering on. I think that's something that I'm certainly not taking credit for that, but I think as sound, music, and voice and some of this stuff has started to push up and you see more reviews, you see some reviewers try to add it to their reviews, and it's all haphazard. It doesn't make any sense. It's just like, yeah, it's good, but they don't really know why it's good or how 3D sound separation can help a gamer or why it's even helping a gamer. They may know inherently, but they don't know how to end up explaining it. So you have all of these things that sort of came together for me. And these were, again, more cerebral moments. They didn't cost anything. But let's talk about cost. Cost back then, it was pretty insane. You had a few ways to software record, including Fraps, which was very CPU heavy. And additionally, HDMI capture cards at that time were actually pretty expensive. Now their prices have dropped and you have multiple companies and multiple ways in which you can do it. But back then it was a little bit more difficult. The consoles didn't have any kind of inborn chips like they do now for streaming to Twitch, as you can do in your PC and your Xbox, those kind of things. So it was very difficult. So finding technology that worked was difficult for two reasons. One, it was difficult, and this is something you guys will deal with here now as we jump from 1080 to 4K more and more, is that at the time we were jumping from SD to HD, remembering that the original Xbox 360 did not actually come with an HDMI port. It came with components. And this was something I had to deal with, was like, how do you capture something, make it look good, and what resolution are you capturing at? This is something where when somebody's getting ready to buy hardware, they can go, okay, this does 1080p or 1080 resolution, I'm cool with it, and they don't realize it's 30 frames per second, or they don't realize it's 720p 60, 1080i, or they don't realize if they want 4K, it's only 4K at 30, when maybe a PC game in particular might be 4K 60, and what those requirements are. Additionally, what the requirements are on your CPU as well as your space. So technology was quite difficult. There was a lot I had to work with and a lot I had to work around. What I did was I decided that there was sort of a status quo I wanted, and I didn't upgrade piecemeal. I upgraded in sort of stages. So I got a recorder I was happy with, audio that I was at that time not happy with, but it was better than what I had. And I sort of used that as a foundation. And then every so often, I would upgrade the foundation together. I wouldn't just upgrade piecemeal. One of the reasons why is because when you start messing with stuff, you'd be quite surprised how everything's connected. For example, a lot of people don't realize that some stereo speakers, when they're too close to your monitor, near field, far field, you can actually end up getting interference in your speakers. And those kind of things can occur in your PC as well. You can get things, for example, onboard audio sound cards may have a lot of good specs, but they may get a lot of whine that you can hear from the fans that are inside. So you have to identify all these and sort of bounce around and figure out what works for you. And I found that a platform upgrade worked better than a piecemeal upgrade. And so I would save a little bit more and I would upgrade and move on from there. But this all really brings me, as I put things together and I started reviewing, this all brings me to review code and how you review things and what you do. Back then, it was a little bit easier to review a game day one and still get some people watching your videos. Additionally, because of the way I talk and the way I cuss, unfortunately now that's completely demonetized, but back then it was acceptable. It was easier for me to drop a couple jokes and talk the way I normally talk and have people still watch the videos. Now it's a little bit more difficult. But back then, it was really scrambling for codes. How do you get codes early? And one of the things I learned quite quickly is that, and this is something that I've always felt, is that you don't deserve a code. It doesn't matter if you have 100 million subscribers. You do not deserve a code. Understand the word I'm using, deserve. You do not. If you have covered a game prior to its release and if they've sent you to preview events, you do not deserve a code still. You don't deserve a code. You may in some way be higher on a list somewhere, but the deserve is never there. You are an outside entity looking into another group completely. You may think you're in the industry. You are, I would say, in the industry, but you're on a subcategory of it. And that subcategory, as a creator of content about an end product, does not in any way, shape, or form mean you deserve anything from them. So what I learned fairly quickly is to start making lists, who responded to my emails for codes, who didn't, what the requirements were. What are your requirements for a code? Do you have any requirements? Do you have a ton of requirements? Do you want me to not cuss? Because that was just a no-go, still is. It's like, I'm going to talk a certain way. And how does this all go about? And I started Google Documents, and I'm telling you guys right now, you absolutely need a list. What, I don't care where you put it, but you need a list of your contacts when it comes to games. What PR contacts have contacted you directly? Who's following you? Who's not? Track your social media. Track everybody who's following you, who comments on your stuff, who tweets your stuff, who gives you a code, because that's your next in for the next title. And be nice to them. You know, they talk. One of the things that I always joke around with different people on the podcast that you see me on Fridays, 10:30 a.m., by the way, ACG on Twitch. We do these podcasts, and many times I'll joke around about how these PR companies might have almost an entire switch of their staff. There's PR companies I've seen where they were working at one company, then they almost all go to work for another. Then those people who are working there are working for a different PR company. That's the way it is. So you got to track these people. And sometimes you can email them, even if they're not at a company anymore, and say, oh, I know you left, but you were my only in. Do you have an in at the new company? And, you know, they might drop you some info. Those kind of things, I think, are very worthwhile. But I think also a big focus on humbleness. You have to be humble. And I think everybody has moments where they're not, including myself, when it comes to what you want from a game company. I want a review code, whatever. But I see videos from people who are like, this situation's weird. They didn't give me a review code, but I'm, you know, I've got 2 million subscribers, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter at all. Has absolutely nothing to do with that. You don't deserve it. You never will. And that's something I think that you should take with you when you get into this industry, is that there is a chance you'll be buying your games all the time forever unless you hit it off. And it's best to plan for the worst, as the saying goes. And I think that that's really important. So I want to talk about, you know, what one of the special moments I had was in a game that, as I was covering titles, what was really, I think, one of the first moments that I knew that the system that I had put together was working well. And I think that's Diablo 3, Reaper of Souls. I was reviewing the console editions at the time. That was a PS4 edition. And it was crazy for me because prior to that, I had seen a couple very good video responses from me. Risen 3 had done well. A couple different videos had done well. They hadn't done amazing, but they had done somewhat well. And I was pretty happy with their response. And it did take, it took me a couple months to sort of understand what people were wanting, understand what I needed to fix. But that Diablo game was one of those titles where when it hit really, really big. It hit really well. It did really well. And I was incredibly happy with just the overall result that I ended up getting with that game. And sort of sitting back and looking and going, you know what? This might be a thing for me. And there wasn't anything particularly about Diablo other than, of course, well, it being Diablo, but understanding that it was a title that not only had a little bit for me going for it already via the name, but additionally sort of fit into what I enjoy doing, which is running around co-op with somebody and smashing people's heads in. I've always liked those games and allowed for this certain particular moment. And you'll have that. You're going to have a moment where everything will just work perfect and you'll see it. And that for me, to sort of round up this short first edition of this podcast, for me, it was Diablo. I realized when I did it that this is something people want to watch and something that people are enjoying. And I had much bigger videos later, but that was the video where I saw people responding, liking the, you know, sort of feeling like friends coming together. And this is also a time when I really realized how I wanted to handle the community on YouTube. And I admit I'm fairly belligerent on YouTube. I'm fairly belligerent towards people, especially commenters that I feel just have no place there or just pretend to like games and don't. This is something that came up a couple days ago on the Twitch podcast where I told people if you're going on to, it was Greedfall Reviews. And I was like, if you're going on to Greedfall Reviews and you're bitching at another person, telling them, you know, and dropping my name, I don't want you as a subscriber at all. It absolutely doesn't matter to me that you're there. You're the type of subscriber I absolutely don't want. Not saying you can't say, hey, here's a different take on it, but it's one of the reasons why I share other people that I've worked with. I share their YouTube reviews. I have to have worked with them first, sort of understand where they're coming from and understand exactly where they're going and that they're trying to sort of further the same kind of conversation style I am, because otherwise it wouldn't make any sense. But with Diablo, I really found all of these things coming together. I found, and this is something that you need to watch out for this because it can sneak by you. I was waiting for it. I was waiting for the aha moment. And as a YouTuber, you may never hit it, but there will be that one time where you do. And I think most YouTubers who are even somewhat successful have a video or a moment where they sort of sit back and they go, this is it. This is sort of what I was looking for. And for me, Diablo was what I was looking for. I started to understand how the community was responding to things. I also started to understand that despite me teasing the devs, because I will certainly take the piss out of devs as a joke, but there was very little in mind that we're personally attacking. And this is something that I've really, other than a couple of videos, I've really stayed away from, because my personal belief is I don't have ESP. If I did, maybe I would personally attack, but I don't exactly know what's going on in a company. So mine were more about like the dumbness that can happen in a meeting, situations I've personally experienced, and taking what I've personally experienced and throwing them into the Diablo review and coming out of it and seeing that response and seeing that the consumers who got the game, but as well as the watchers who watched that video, understood. And there was this communication moment where I realized everybody's getting it. And, you know, aside from there'll be a certain contingent who won't, that's fine. But everybody's getting it, including me. And it was that understanding that was a great moment. And I got to tell you, my best piece of advice, or one of the pieces of advice I'll give in this, is you absolutely got to be prepped for those. You have to be prepared very closely and keenly, keeping your eye on what's going on, and understand that moment when, not just because a video does well in numbers, that could mean anything. I could fucking do a reaction video and it would do well. I mean, there's certain things that you could do that would only take like 6 seconds, and you could do really well on videos or subscribers. You could do news videos daily and you can do really well with those. But what I'm talking about is when you have a plan and that plan comes together, you're going to see that one moment on that video. And this may be, you know, 10 times the normal viewers that normally see it, or 10 times the comments, or 10 times the longevity when people watch it, but you're going to notice that bump. And I implore you to keep an eye on it and sort of understand when that's hit, because it doesn't mean to change everything to that. By all means, it absolutely doesn't. But what it does mean is that hit, and then you can track down why it hit. Did it hit because it was a popular title? Maybe. Did it hit because that was a sort of the top tier way in which you are delivering your information? You did it a good job. Your video is the proper length and so forth. Maybe, but you need to understand that it's happening so that you can actually identify within those various different criteria, which one of them it actually is. And for me, I was able to identify that community was a big deal, and that people were sharing the videos and people were commenting on them. And that's what was helping me, was the community was helping. And that's one of the reasons why I've fostered community since day one. It's one of the reasons why I will continue to do so when it comes to really good communities. I think we have a great one, despite some negativity that comes up in games. Overall, we have an amazing community, and it's because I just don't stand for shit. And I really don't think the community wants to stand for it either. We can all get in, you know, three-year-old fucking pulling on ponytails kind of battles about console platforms and stuff like that. But really, that doesn't add much. But discussion about an actual game very much does so. So I think I want to wrap this up with that success. I want you guys, people who are watching this, you can feel free to comment if I put it on YouTube, on Anchor. You can subscribe there. You can leave a review of the actual podcast itself, and you can certainly say if you like this or not. I'll probably add a little bit more as we go on and move on. But this is sort of just going to be basically walking the walk with Carrick, what it's like to have started at zero and how to get yourself above that, and trying to always end with a success, which, like I said, for me was Diablo, seeing that pop, understanding that's what worked. And unfortunately, what success means for other parts on the channel, you know, does it mean you have to remove some stuff, which I'll certainly cover, because we did. What does it mean when you have to change things? What does it mean when your next videos don't do so well? How do you end up recovering from that? Or should you? And I got to tell you this, there's a couple bits of advice I'll just give right at the end. One, you got to get a thick skin. If you're going to jump into this, you have to have a thick skin. You can't react to everybody. And in fact, I would say reacting to nobody quite usually helps. If somebody's just being a jackass, just, you know, okay, I'll certainly be a jackass back. But at some point, you just stop. And there are really no shortcuts other than, I would say, whatever is currently like trending on YouTube. You can certainly go a certain route and do well on YouTube. But if you want to create something for longevity and sort of make sure that your channel feels organic to you, and you can look back day one and look forward to day 5,000 and go, this is the track that I expected to take, without being driven by YouTube, without being driven by these other outside things, you do have to have a thick skin, because you have to sort of plug through what is some pretty serious adversity that can pop up. And I'll talk about that as well. I'll talk about adversity when it comes to financial, when it comes to cerebral, and you trying to figure something out and running into a roadblock time and time and time again. It can be quite frustrating. But I would love for you guys, if you get a chance, subscribe on the various different platforms, YouTube and iTunes or wherever you listen to this, Spotify, Anchor. It absolutely does help. I hope you guys like this. There'll be more in depth as we go forward. I just wanted to give you guys some general ideas of how it all started, what it was like when it started, some of the difficulties, and like I said, ending on a positive, which for me was sort of that light turning on with that review and seeing that people are actually enjoying it. Anyway, that's it for me. If you get a chance, check out the Patreon. It absolutely does help. For people who don't understand, there's been multiple videos I've done that are demonetized, and now the new thing is to adult ad restrict them, which happened with the last three reviews. So the reviews just aren't doing well at all when it comes to any kind of intake. So if you guys get a chance, Patreon absolutely helps. It's only one to whatever you want to give bucks, and you get a ton of stuff, whether it be merchandise, whether it be invites to the Discord where people come on the podcast and chat with us as patrons, all kinds of stuff you can get there. It really does help. It's Angry Centaur Gaming on Patreon. Anyway, that's it for me. Peace out, and I look forward to talking to you on Chapter 2.